Thank you very much, Bill. Happy Sabbath, brethren. And happy Sabbath to everyone listening in on the internet. Mr. Segley asked us to share our healings. We know about healings that take place, wonders and signs that take place. That an unusual thing happened last week when we were going up to visit my daughter. Anna was driving the car, and we got on the other side of Gorman up there, going downhill toward Fraser Park. And she decided that she wanted to stop driving, her back was hurting, so she moves over from one side of the car to the other. And I walk around the back. And going downhill up there, people were traveling in excess of 70 miles an hour, and these truckers were traveling 70 miles an hour as well. A couple of these big semis go by, and I didn't think anything about it, and I reached down to pull the seat back because I couldn't get in. She had to pull all the way up. And I'm standing over here like this. This will be the edge of the car. I'm holding on to the door like this, and a third semi goes by. And this has a massive wind current with it. Huge. It was just amazing. Started to pull the door out of my hand. What took place was, this guy was so close that if I'd have been over another foot and a half, I wouldn't be standing here today. Later on, when we got out of the car and went back to see over my daughter's place, there was actually marks on the side of the door from him coming that close to the car. And he's rolling along fast. Okay, my message is about, and needless to say, I thank God again and again for that one. My message today is entitled, Our Character. What I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about compromise. I'm going to tell you what the dictionary says about it. And then we're going to talk about character, a few places here. And then I'm going to give you my definition of what character is. And that is going to comprise what the message will be about. Character is the opposite of compromise. Compromise, from the dictionary, says to give up one's principles. Give up your principles, give up your ideals, standards, values, and so on. And to weaken or give up for expediency. This other thing is easier, that's easier, and so on and so on. I'd rather attend a party because a buddy's here than go to Sabbath service. And God will understand. I haven't seen him now for 7 years, and God will understand. That's what compromise is. Character, what is it? Well, the dictionary says character is a code of honor, that we follow. Ten Commandments is an excellent example of a code of honor. And that's what we are to live by. We're to live by this highest code of honor that there is. And it shows respect for the eternal, the Ten Commandments do, and it also shows respect for our fellow man. Another character trait is a pattern of good behavior. Pattern of good behavior. We have good character, we have pattern of good behavior. He's a hard worker. She's very patient. She's so kind to everyone. This fellow is always on time. He's never late. This guy's not a braggart. He doesn't brag about anything. He doesn't hardly ever talk about himself. Another character trait talks about moral strength, morally strong, a moral constitution. He always puts God first in his life. Be an example of it. She puts the eternal first in her life always. Those would be examples of that. Another one that the dictionary talks about is self-discipline. It goes along in daily life. Be one who prays every morning without fail, or one who prays every evening prior to bed without fail, or somebody who does both every day. Get up and pray. Pray before we go to bed. One who does daily Bible study, that's self-discipline. One who meditates on the eternal at work and throughout the day, doesn't have music going, we're sitting and meditating about the sacred scriptures and the time to come. One who is not a couch potato in the days of the NFL and the NBA, guilty. Yeah, when my teams are out there, I just seem to be gravitated toward them. One who tries to eat properly, doesn't overeat and doesn't indulge and isn't always on the wrong food. When you get to be my age, you want to take vitamins. You got to take them every day or you miss out on stuff, especially high blood pressure. Get 8 hours of sleep. I'd never win that bet. Has a daily to-do list. All of these things are like self-discipline where we follow through on them. The last one listed here in the dictionary really surprised me because it's the word fortitude. I thought I knew what fortitude was. Fortitude is someone who has inner strength to bear injury, pain, suffering, misfortune, misery, all the negative things in life. And he or she does it calmly, quietly, patiently, without complaining, and without excuses. Life is life, and life is like a game of poker. We have to play the hand we've been dealt. We don't get to go back and relive it. I'm not going to turn there, but Matthew 17:14 is a perfect example of Christ before Pilate. He remains silent to all the charges. That is fortitude at its best. Christ, after hanging on the cross for 6 hours, did not accuse, did not blaspheme, and that is immense fortitude. Christ is a perfect example of fortitude. And that is a great example for all of us to follow. He has very strong character. Now, my definition of character, I'll tell you what that is. I believe that character is what we all do when we are alone and face life. When I'm alone and I have to face my challenges, I either rise or I fail. When you have to face your challenges, it's the same thing. We either have character or we have compromise. My first example of this, I'm not going to read it, but it's in Matthew 26 and verse 75. When the disciples were all together with Christ, they were as a group on the Passover. They were all morally strong. Yes, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you. I'll never leave you. I'll never let you down. I'm with you all the way, Christ. You can count on me. I'll be there. However, when Peter was all alone in that courtyard, all by himself out there, no disciples around, no friends, no buddies, he denied Jesus Christ 3 times before the rooster crowed. Now, what was it? About 9 hours before that, he was seeing how strong he was. You see, there's where character comes in. When the stress is on and we are all by ourselves, what do we do? Second example is about Christ. Christ and Pilate, spoke with each other. However, Christ did not answer any of the charges Pilate presented to him from the Jews. The Jews were accusing him of these things, and he had a conversation with Pilate, but he did not answer a single charge that the Pharisees brought out. And this is tremendous, tremendous character. Christ is all alone right there, and he didn't drop the ball. He didn't cave in or compromise. When crucified, Christ was all alone on the cross. He had to take all the heat. He had to have the nails driven into him. They were not driven into me or you. They were driven into him. Whenever you get your hand pinched in a door and a finger in a door, that hurts and you want to get it out right away. Well, that's the same with Christ. He didn't want those nails in there, but he had them nonetheless. And when he was on the cross, he did not accuse, blaspheme, or put down anyone. That is immense fortitude. Immense fortitude. Christ is a perfect example for us to follow in his self-discipline and fortitude. If we hung on a cross for 6 hours, where would we stand? Where would we stand with those nails driven in excruciating pain? Well, my third example is about Joshua, and it's in Joshua 1, verses 6, 7, and 9. Here is God, and he's now instructing Joshua on character. Joshua is going to be all alone, and Moses is gone now, and the Eternal is instructing Joshua. In Joshua 1, verse 6, 7, and 9, Joshua 1, verse 6, 7, and 9, first thing he says is, be strong and courageous, verse 6. He repeats himself in verse 7, be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful. That's pretty straightforward stuff. Don't turn to the right or to the left. Let's go to verse 9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. There it is a third time. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified. Do not be discouraged or dismayed. Right there is fortitude. Fortitude. For the Eternal your God will be with you wherever you go. See, Joshua was a warrior, and he was morally strong, physically strong, and he had quiet fortitude because of the way that God explained this to him. Now, while we're in the book of Joshua, I'm going to give you the fourth example, and this is about Caleb. Joshua 14. Joshua 14 is where Caleb comes into play for this message. Now, here in verses 6 through 9, Joshua 14, it's Caleb talking. He's talking here about his convictions. My convictions, he says, and being wholehearted. Verse 6. When the men of Judah approached Joshua, you know what the Eternal said to Moses, the man of God at Kadesh Barnea, about you and me. And breaking into verse 7, and I brought him back a report according to my convictions, but my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, followed the Eternal my God wholeheartedly. Verse 9. So on that day, Moses swore to me, the land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Eternal, my God, wholeheartedly. What he's talking about is explained in Deuteronomy 1. Deuteronomy 1. Here we're going to see that he's talking about him and 11 other spies that were sent up through modern day to Israel there to spy out the land. And they went up there throughout the land, and that's what he's speaking about here. The spies brought back their report, and Caleb brought back his report. Now, in this situation, the score is 11 against Caleb, and he again is alone. He's the lone voice of righteousness. And he has to stand up. He's got the convictions to stand up and talk wholeheartedly about going into the land. Listen to his righteous comments. It's Deuteronomy 1 and verse 27. You grumbled in your tents and you said, "The Eternal hates us. So he brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Ammonites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made us lose heart. They say the people are stronger and taller than we are. The cities are large and the walls are up to the sky. We even saw the Anakites there." That's the voice of the 11. Here's Caleb's voice, verse 29. I said to you, do not be terrified. Do not be afraid of them. The Eternal, your God, is going before you. He will fight for you, as he did for you in Egypt, before your very eyes, and in the desert. There you saw how the Eternal, your God, carried you, as a father carries his son, all the way you went, until you have reached this place. That is quiet fortitude, brethren. Fortitude and self-discipline, that's what character is. And he was all alone. Nobody supported him. Nobody backed him up. But he didn't give in. He didn't back down. He sat there, or stood there, rather, and gave this testimony. And, of course, the whole congregation listened to the 11. So going back to Joshua 14, last part of verse 10, we see that God blessed Caleb's health. So here I am today, he's talking about himself, 85 years old. So it's been 45 years since this spy mission went out, and he's 85 years old now. Verse 11, God blesses him not only with health, but with character. He's 85 years old, so he's been blessed that way. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go to battle now as I was then. That is character, that last statement. I am vigorous. I want to go and I want to do this and I am going to do it. That's what fortitude is. He's not alone here by any means. He's asking Joshua to grant him a certain piece of property. And he says he can handle taking over that property from the people that are living there. Verse 13, we see Joshua blesses Caleb with the property that he asked for. Here again, character pays off in God's eyes. Joshua blessed Caleb, verse 13, son of Jephunneh, and gave him Hebron for an inheritance. So Hebron has belonged to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenzanite, ever since. I couldn't very well give examples of fortitude without talking about David. So I'm going to go to 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. Verses 34 and 35. Here we see David's code of honor, his moral strength, his courage, his fortitude, and his all-around character. 1 Samuel 17, 34. David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep." Well, he's working on his dad's farm. When a lion or bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it down, and killed it. Are you kidding me? These lions weigh 350 pounds plus. And he hit this animal with his sling, with a stone smaller than a baseball. And this lion didn't want to let go of the sheep, and he goes over there and grabs it by its mane, strikes it, and kills it. This is like hand-to-hand combat. How strong was this kid? I say kid because he's referred to in here as a boy. Referred to as a boy. And you weren't ready for military service in the Bible and other places until in the Old Testament, until you were 20 years old. So my guess is he's a 19-year-old teenager, and he's out there all night long in the rain and the cold and the sun and the wind and the heat by himself. He's all alone. There's nobody that came along to help him with this lion. And he didn't shoot an arrow at it. He went up there and grabbed it by its, apparently by its throat. I don't know. The bear is the same way. He was alone against a bear that would weigh 350 pounds. And how this kid fights and kills both is just amazing. His amazing resolve. Rottweiler dogs today weigh about 125 pounds, and they attack and kill people. We hear about that from time to time. Someplace in the country, there's one that attacks people. It gets on TV. And here with David, we see absolutely no hesitation in him. He didn't back down. He didn't back up. And what difference did it make? Because his father had other sheep. His father had other lambs. So if he lost one lamb, it's not the end of the world. But to David, that was something he couldn't tolerate. He couldn't tolerate an animal coming in and stealing one of his father's sheep. He didn't back down, he didn't back up, and he's all alone. He made the decision himself, and he went and did it. That's what resolve is. That's what fortitude is. That's what courage and character is. From here, we're going to move on to a man named Goliath. This is why David was out there in the first place talking to the king about this. Saul is the king over Israel, and he's their leader. Now, he's not an average guy. He is big, he is tall, he's handsome, he's head and shoulders, or head anyway, taller than the other men in the military. And he should have been the one to face Goliath. But there's one problem that he has. He is gripped with fear. If the men in the military were 5'6", 5'7", and he's a head taller than that, he's got to be 6'5". He'd be taller than what I am by far, or at least a couple inches. So anyway, that's what David is about to get involved in next. Now, here is why Saul is so fearful about going out. This Goliath is about 10 feet tall. So he towers over even the tallest guy there in the Israeli army. Some think his weight was about 700 pounds plus. I'm not sure that he would have been quite that heavy, but he could have been 600 pounds. He is a huge guy with immense strength. The armor that he would wear to battle, if he had armor on that day, would weigh about 175 pounds. That's what it's estimated at. How would you like to walk around with a guy that weighs 175 pounds on your back going into battle? Pretty big guy. The head of his spear weighs 16 pounds. They weighed it afterwards, 16 pounds. That's the weight of a normal bowling ball, and that's what's on the end of his spear when he throws it. If it connects with you, it's going straight through. That's the weight of a 16-pound sledgehammer, too. I picked one up earlier this week, and I didn't want to do that anymore. I used to swing those things all the time, but now a 12-pounder is more than enough. I'm glad I don't have to swing them anymore. In verse 37, what is David's attitude? What's his attitude about Goliath? So here we have verse 37. Here's what he's talking about in 1 Samuel 17:37. The Eternal, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. The king said to David, go, and the Eternal be with you. See, he didn't even volunteer. The king did not volunteer to go out when David went out against Goliath. Well, how does, they're about to engage in battle, so how does Goliath come to this battle? Goliath came in his own name, with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. We'll see that in a moment. David, however, comes in the name of the Eternal. He gives the Eternal the honor. He gives the Eternal the glory. And he is spiritually strong. And he goes into battle with the tools of a shepherd, a staff, a sling, and a stone. Not only that, we don't realize it sometimes, but it's two against one. Because Goliath had what's called an armor bearer, or a guy that walked ahead of him, and had a shield, tall shield that was going to guard him and Goliath as well. But that didn't do any good. This shield bearer failed in his job because his boss died. But you see, David puts God first in all of these things. And he's all alone when this thing goes on. No one else was with him. No one intended to help him. They sat there and watched this contest go on. In verse 50, we read the conclusion. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine. But you see, David first gives God all the glory, all the credit, and all the respect. In turn, God gave David a great victory for his great character. The sixth example is Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We're going to go to Daniel 3 and verse 1. Daniel 3 and verse 1. Here's what's happened. Verse 1, the king Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, as we know, and set it up on the plain in the province of Babylon. The next verse, we see the king invited all of the most important people, the wealthiest people of the nation. He invited the mayors. He invited the governors. He invited the what we'd have as elected officials. He invited the field marshals. He invited the generals, the commanders, and on it goes. All the wealthy of the land. They all came to this dedication. They were there by the thousands and thousands, right outside the province of the city of Babylon. Okay, this is in verse 2. He then summoned magistrates and all the provisional officers to come to the dedication of the image he'd set up. We understand that. Naturally, with a new image, we have to have a new law. Here we have a new law in verse 5. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, you must fall down and worship the image of gold. Well, you can't have a new law without punishment. Verse 6, whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace. So when you hear the sound of music, you had to worship. I'm going to take an aside right here and talk about why this image might have been set up. In the preceding chapter, in chapter 2 of Daniel, Daniel had went to the king. He'd been summoned to the king. And the king couldn't remember this dream, and he had no idea what it meant. Well, the dream involved a statue, an immense statue. And we know about it as the head of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the stomach and thighs of brass, and the feet of iron and clay. Am I the only person that thinks that it's odd that the very following chapter, the very next chapter, this king has built an image of gold, 90 feet tall, not too long after he had his dream? Just sort of thinking out loud. Was this image also about his power, Nebuchadnezzar's power, his glory? Was the king asking the nation to bow down and worship him? Emperor worship was something that was done throughout the Middle East, long before the Jews even came in there. Was that what was going on? Just sort of thinking out loud. Now back to our story, verses 16 and 17. Our three Jewish friends respectfully declined to worship the king's image. Thousands and thousands bowed down, but these three held their ground all alone. They were completely alone. All the people were on the king's side. And that took an immense amount of character and fortitude. It took a lot of character and fortitude to stand up there when everyone else was bowing. So Daniel 16 says, verse 16, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve, you see they're putting Almighty God first. The God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand. But if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up. And they didn't. That took an immense amount of character for them to stand up and do that. These three men stood tall for the living God. They did not compromise one bit, even though there's thousands of people out there. Where would we stand in something like that? If a lion came through that back door and you're in here cleaning up this hall, what would you do? 350-pound lion walked in here. What would you do? If a bunch of people came in yelling and screaming and hollering about us keeping the Sabbath, and you're the only person here, what would you do? If you're asked to work on the Sabbath, it's only this one time. But the problem with that is that it never stops. You give an inch, you'll be asked to give more. You give another inch, you'll have to be asked to give more than that. But they did not bow down, and they did not follow his orders. They put their lives on line for God. I wonder if we could measure up to this. Well, God rewards them in verse 30. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, who was about to execute them, promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. And God saw that they got rewarded for not bowing down to an idol and breaking the second commandment. Their good discipline and their character and honoring God and putting Him first carried the day for them. The seventh example is Daniel again. This is in Daniel 6. Daniel now has a brand new boss. He got a brand new king. His name is Darius. And they believe that this could be Cyrus. So it appears that either the name Darius or Cyrus would be correct here. We're going to see in verse 3 that Daniel's character is so outstanding, the Persian king desires and makes plans to promote him. Verse 3, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators by his exceptional quality that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Now this really angers his fellow members who are overseers as well. They want to be in charge. They don't want him to be in charge at all. They try to bring Daniel down in verse 4. At this, the administrators tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. You see, he was righteous. His conduct was righteous. His character didn't have any flaws in it. His character was impeccable. He had impeccable character. His fortitude was there as well. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. So, verse 4, Daniel's good behavior and his code of honor make them come up short. Well, they didn't give up, however, so they go to Plan B. Plan B is where they became Pharisaical. They became Pharisee-like. And they attack Daniel's religion, just like the Pharisees attack Christ's religion. Their scheme is going to appeal to the king's ego. It's going to appeal to his pride. It's going to appeal to his human nature. They devised it that way. Of course, when we read it, we see that Satan is behind it. Again, Daniel is completely alone, as so many in this particular narrative are. Just as today, we face this world much of the time alone ourselves. The Sabbath service, there's other people are on, but we go through the world the other 6 days, a lot of it where we're not involved around any other of God's saints. Well, in verse 6, we're going to see that the king bought into this deadly scheme. Daniel 6 and verse 6. The administrators went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever." The royal administrators, the prefects, the advisors, the governors, and so on, have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, of course, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. He didn't realize, because his ego was big enough, he didn't realize and think things through that this could have profound effect on people, especially Daniel. Now, Daniel put the eternal first in everything. And we're going to see that verse 10 tells us about Daniel in regards to his unwavering character. Verse 10. Here we see Daniel doing what he's always done. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home, went to his upstairs apartment where the windows were open toward Jerusalem. Remember the prayer of Solomon when he built the temple? He wanted the God to hear and listen to everyone who faced Jerusalem, who faced that temple, no matter which direction they were. If they faced Jerusalem, God would hear and answer their prayer. And that's what Daniel was doing right here by opening up the window toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God, just as he had done before. Just as he had done. We see Daniel's code of honor toward God in this situation. We see his great fortitude in facing death. We see his moral strength, very strong spiritually. We see a strong constitution and convictions. He did not waver once. He could have stopped praying. The king's decree was only for 30 days. He could have compromised his prayer life. But Daniel had tremendous self-discipline, tremendous fortitude. Even though he was all alone, he didn't change one iota. How well could we stand up under this kind of stress facing certain death in a lion's den? We were not supposed to pray. We were asked to stop praying. Verse 16, Daniel's fate here is sealed. The king gave the order. They brought Daniel and threw him in the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually," you see, he also knew about Daniel's prayer life, "may God rescue you." In verse 19, we see the king arriving at the lion's den. He went, spent a night of anguish and worry, and the king was up awake all night. Verse 19, next page. On the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. He wanted to find out what was going on. Daniel had survived the den, as we know, and what happens with Daniel? In verse 28, Daniel prospered. He was all alone in this den of lions. I don't know how many there were there, but they were all muted to where they did not attack him. They pulled him out, and there wasn't so much as a scratch on him. It's just amazing to think of that going on. Being in with these vicious creatures, it's hard to believe. And God honored him for putting God first in his life, and he honored him for not buckling, for not giving in. He honored him for his character. The eighth example is a widow. A widow who's all alone in the New Testament, Luke 21. Roy was there a little earlier today in a different verse. Luke 21 and verse 1. Now Christ's in the temple. He's in the church there. He's just observing people. He's looking over here, looking over here, looking up at the balcony. He's observing people. As he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. That was a normal thing. And he looks over and he sees a widow in verse 2. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. This widow was old. She was all alone. She was all by herself, just as we are much of the 6 days of the week. She's a widow because she had no husband. She's all alone. She has no sons, or her lot in life would have been a little better. She is in extreme poverty. She reaches down in her purse and put in what's called two mites. That is equivalent of two pennies today. But at that time, the two mites wouldn't even amount to one penny today. You see, she didn't have to put in anything. She could have come there and worshiped and not given an offering. She could have come there and worshiped and given one of the mites and at least went home with one. But she didn't do that. She didn't compromise. She intended to give it all, and she did. She came to the temple alone and with money. And she goes home alone, and she goes home broke. She was alone, and she gave everything that she had to God. Everything. It's amazing. Just amazing. We don't know anything about what happened, whether she was blessed, because the story doesn't go there. But we see true character. We see fortitude here. And we see a woman that was devoted to Almighty God with all her heart. And in verse 3 and 4, Jesus Christ describes her character so very, very well. Verse 3, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All those people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. She had great moral and spiritual strength. She had great fortitude. I had another example I was going to comment on, but I don't have quite enough time, running out of time here. So, brethren, hope this was helpful for everyone. And have a great weekend. We'll see you Sabbath.